You are listening to WGXC ICRA, hands-on creative community radio at 90.7 FM and streaming live online at WGXC.org. WGXC is a program division of Wave Farm.
Hi, I'm Jack Sensabar from Catskill, inviting you to listen to my show, Backtracks in Time, dedicated to the history of Greene County, its notable people and places, and the Hudson River. The fourth Tuesday of every month from 2 to 3 p.m., broadcasting live from WGXC's satellite studio at the Catskill Library, you'll hear interviews with local historians, longtime residents with stories to tell, and archival recorded material. So please join me for Backtracks in Time, every fourth Tuesday at 2 p.m., right here on WGXC 90.7 FM, your community radio station.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
You've tuned in to All Together Now, WGXC's regional look at the news from Hudson Valley and the Capital Region, from the Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. I'm Tom Rowe, and today you'll hear all sorts of local news updates, weather, interviews, and more, plus community events and the song of the day on All Together Now.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network, network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
We take you now to
this radio broadcast.
You are tuned in to All Together Now, a collaborative one-hour news show for community radio stations in the Capital Region and New York's Hudson Valley. All Together Now features contributions from the public, along with programmers at WOOC in Troy and WGXC in Accra, featuring local and regional news, weather updates, and newsmaker interviews. Next, the national headlines from Public News Service.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for July, Friday the 13th, 2018. I'm Mike Clifford. The FBI's Peter Strzok spends 10 hours in open testimony. Also on the Friday rundown, Granite Staters protest Attorney General Sessions' approach to combating opioid abuse and a report on Latino Conservation Week. Topping our news, FBI Special Agent Peter Strzok, whose anti-Trump text messages provided fodder for congressional Republicans who alleged the Bureau was biased against Donald Trump, said Thursday that a high-profile hearing focusing on his conduct was just another victory notch in Putin's belt. That from the Huffington Post. The Post adds that Strzok, testifying at a joint hearing held by the House Judiciary and House Oversight Committees, called Russian interference in the 2016 elections a grave attack on our democracy that was wildly successful in sowing discord in our nation and shaking faith in American institutions. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions greeted by protesters in Concord, New Hampshire, where he spoke with law enforcement agencies about the opioid crisis. Linda Barr has our report.
Outside the federal courthouse, healthcare recovery and criminal justice reform advocates carried signs that read, "Healthcare is a human right. Healthcare, not prisons, and beds, not cells." They want Sessions to defend the Affordable Care Act and its requirement to cover people with pre-existing conditions, which he's already said he won't do. Zandra Rice Hawkins with the group Granite State Progress says the Trump administration is trying every angle to dismantle the ACA.
And that is really dangerous because people need health care coverage, but particularly for the opioid crisis, to have access to substance use disorder treatment has been the number one tool that we have used to combat that crisis here in New Hampshire.
Sessions was in Concord on a tour to announce what he calls Operation Synthetic Opioid Surge, or SOS. He is ordering prosecutors in 10 areas with some of the highest overdose death rates, including New Hampshire, to, in his words, systematically and relentlessly prosecute every single synthetic opioid case.
A law for evaluating the environmental impact of infrastructure projects being targeted for changes by the White House and the Congress, Eric Tegedoff explains.
The National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA, lays out the review process for federal agencies when considering major projects. Attorney Susan Jane Brown with Western Environmental Law Center says NEPA allows agencies to look before they leap, but it's garnered criticism from Republicans, including Utah Representative Rob Bishop, who says the NEPA process paralyzes activity in the West. Brown says the Trump administration wants to follow his lead.
There are many in the administration that have taken the House's willingness to gut NEPA as a green light to proceed with larger policy initiatives coming from the executive branch that have the same sort of impact.
Federal agencies use the NEPA process to consider the environmental impacts of many projects, including timber sales, building highways and bridges, and renewing licenses for dams. One review now underway is looking at dams on the Columbia and Snake Rivers and their impact on endangered salmon.
The Center on Environmental Quality accepts public comments on the process through July the 20th. The first ever death in the state of Wisconsin for Rocky Mountain spotted fever has state health officials warning residents to stay vigilant. Tramell Gomes tells us they mean not only during the summer months, but all year round.
If left untreated, the disease, carried by ticks, can cause severe illness, and it took the life of a La Crosse County resident on Tuesday. Rocky Mountain spotted fever isn't as common as Lyme disease, and it's even less common in Wisconsin. But epidemiologist Rebecca Osborne at the Wisconsin Department of Health Services says it's important to recognize the signs and get medical care.
They develop symptoms like fever, rash, nausea, vomiting, headache, things like that, muscle aches, to go see their healthcare provider for possible testing and treatment.
Osborne says her department hears about 5 to 10 cases of Rocky Mountain fever per year. Most are successfully treated with antibiotics. Details surrounding the death have not yet been released. I'm Tramell Gomes.
Rocky Mountain spotted fever is most common in the central and southeastern parts of the U.S. And finally, Latinos expected to make up nearly a third of the U.S. population by the year 2050, according to the census projections. Conservation groups want to ensure that Latinos stay engaged in environmental stewardship. Here's Catherine Davis Young.
Latino Conservation Week starts this Saturday and aims to bring these communities outdoors and showcase Latino-led environmental efforts. Polling from Colorado College shows Latinos in Western states overwhelmingly support protections for public lands and wildlife. But Jenny Brandt with the Hispanic Access Foundation says their contributions to stewardship don't always get recognition.
And that's something that we know is a cultural value, but I think is something that isn't understood overall. And so we really wanted to show that.
Latino Conservation Week runs through July 22nd. Environmental groups, churches, and community organizations will host events at public parks, wildlife refuges, and other natural areas around the country. Events are online at latinoconservationweek.com.
Events in Nevada include a picnic at Spring Mountain Ranch State Park on the 15th. Clark County commissioners at next week's meeting are scheduled to recognize July as Latino Conservation Month. Have a great weekend. I'm Mike Clifford. You've been newsing and cruising with Public News Service. We're member and listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
Here is the regional weather forecast for the Hudson Valley and Capital Region.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a sunny Friday with a high near 78 and a low around 63. Then Saturday, there's a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 p.m. Mostly cloudy skies and a high near 81. Saturday night, there's a 40% chance of rain with a low around 66. Sunday, it should be mostly sunny with a high near 85 and a low around 67. And Monday, it should be mostly sunny with a high near 88 and a low around 69. I'm Tom Rowe for WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported, Creative Community Radio.
Here are the Hudson Dusters, Catskill musicians John Byron Wooden and Foggy Otis, with Straight Away from their soon-to-be-released album, Dare to Dream.
Stranger stands among your wife. Got no extra time to wait and ask you for his name. Got a pocket full of dimes worth a few short stops and plans along the way. Saying I am bound,
I am bound.
Boy, yes, I'm bound. Straight away. For his sweetheart, she's a fair and fancy freedom loving woman that may can't bear the thought of thinking that her impression of him says he's gone astray. So I am bound,
I am bound.
Boy, yes, I'm bound straight away. Of his rights, not a chain could hold him down, much less could it drag him with this train. Know this stranger, he won't be tied, lest the bind his arms belong to sweet Adelaide.
Tune in to All Together Now, WGXC's collaborative hour-long news show at 6 p.m. featuring local.
WOOC correspondent Mark Dunley talks with constitutional law professor Stephen Clark of Albany Law School about the nomination of Judge Brett Kavanaugh to the U.S. Supreme Court.
This week, President Donald Trump nominated federal appeals judge Brett Kavanaugh to replace retiring Justice Anthony Kennedy on the Supreme Court. With the Republicans holding a very slim majority in the Senate, the nomination process is likely to be contentious, with much of the media coverage focusing on the issue of abortion rights. We are joined now by Professor Stephen Clark, who teaches constitutional law at Albany Law School, to discuss the nomination. Professor Clark, what can you tell us about the qualifications of Judge Kavanaugh to be a member of the United States Supreme Court, and does his record raise any particular concerns with you?
Well, thanks for having me, first of all. He does have really superb paper credentials for a nominee to the Supreme Court, went to Ivy League law school and has served in lower court for a number of years, so he's got judicial experience. He served in the George W. Bush administration, so he has some experience in the executive branch. And his biography looks fairly similar to the other justices that that are on the court now. That could be objected to by some people. The court is exclusively composed of Ivy League grads. It's exclusively composed of people who were judges, who've never held elective office, who don't really have terribly diverse backgrounds. There is some racial diversity on the court, but even those judges went through the Ivy League schools. So people have objected to that lack of diversity, and maybe it affects the perspective, particularly not having anybody who's ever run for elected office, either executive branch or legislative branch. But, you know, he's chosen for his ideology. We all know that. The interest groups, Federalist Society, Heritage Foundation, have their list of people they've vetted to have fairly, actually quite conservative nominees for Trump. And so there are plenty of bases to object to him on ideological grounds from the left, somewhat from the center as well, actually.
Do you think a judge's position on Roe v. Wade should be such a central litmus test as to whether or not to confirm his or her nomination?
I wish it were not that way, but I think it's inevitable that it is going to be that way, because Roe is the most controversial, probably, decision in the last half century. It's probably one of the shakier ones in terms of judicial reasoning, supporting the recognition of the right there. And it's also obviously of extreme importance to the religious right and quite important to the women's movement and to the left as well. So I think it's unavoidable, but I do think what has happened is decades and decades of relentlessly focusing on Roe versus Wade has sacrificed attention to all sorts of other issues and has kind of warped constitutional law as a result. People who oppose abortion and therefore support some of these really conservative judges may actually not like a lot of decisions that they render on some other topics. But the relentless focus on Roe has produced these conservative justices, and so it ends up affecting the law entirely, not just Roe versus Wade. So, yeah, I do wish the focus were not so clearly on that, but I think it's partly a political strategy on the part of the Democrats trying to dislodge a couple of Republican senators and get them to vote no. I guess they think this is the best issue. They have to try and do that.
Well, you mentioned other issues, and as a D.C. Circuit Justice, Kavanaugh frequently ruled against the Environmental Protection Agency. What can you tell us about his perspective on environmental issues?
He has a worrisome perspective more generally than just environmental issues, but on the scope of the power of the federal government to regulate, not just environment, although that's a great example, but we're also talking about consumer regulation, financial regulation, labor regulation. There is an agenda on the hard right to have a court force onto the country a much more limited role for Congress than we have had for the past 80 years. And that would involve striking down a great deal of federal legislation in all of those areas that I mentioned. The Affordable Care Act is another one. And so I do think there's cause for concern there. I'm not sure he provides the fifth vote to do that. He might provide the fourth vote to do that. I'm not sure. It depends on where the Chief Justice, John Roberts, stands on those issues, and he seems not quite on board with that agenda. But it's getting close to a majority for that. What we have with these judges are activists. There are liberal activists who strike down legislation pursuing liberal values. Conservatives often claim that they're not activists. These conservatives are activists, too. They're striking down legislation in pursuit of conservative values. So we're ending up with this choice between activists of the left and activists of the right, unfortunately. And that's left the court bitterly divided, as you see, in 5-4, 5-4, 5-4, in case after case after case. And it's made the confirmation stakes so much higher.
So the national media has also focused quite a bit on the apparent position of Judge Kavanaugh that a president of the United States should be exempt from any criminal prosecution, at least while he or she is in office. Is this an accurate portrayal of Judge Kavanaugh's position, and would you agree with his perspective?
I think there is cause for concern with what he has said, and the Senate really should delve into it closely. I'm not sure that they can get an answer out of him, but there is some misrepresentation of his position, I think. What he said was that Congress should pass a statute that exempts the president from criminal prosecution and other kinds of court cases while he or she's in office. Suggesting that Congress needs to do it, one could infer that that Kavanaugh doesn't himself think the court should just exempt the president from that, so perhaps he wouldn't vote to just do it without Congress authorizing it. But the reason he thought Congress should pass a law to exempt the president is because he's convinced that this kind of legal proceeding is extremely burdensome on the executive branch. And that is an argument that also has a constitutional analog. So that same argument could be made to justify the court granting the president that immunity by itself. So because of the reason he offered, I think we do have to worry somewhat about whether he would transfer that to a judicial exemption that's not authorized by Congress for the same reasons that he articulates for the statutory proposal.
Now, Republicans, of course, hold a very slight majority in the Senate, and as expected, as Senator McCain, due to his illness, probably is not going to be cast in a vote. You know, it's hard to read a crystal ball, but what do you think would need to happen to actually derail his nomination at this point?
Frankly, I am not sure there is anything that would. Death of a Republican senator from a Democratic state and a new Democratic appointee in the Senate. But barring that kind of macabre situation with the Senate the way it is, I'm not sure there is anything. This matters extremely importantly to the religious right, and they are very powerful in the Republican Party. It would take something pretty extreme for a Republican senator to go against them on this. This is the central thing that they want. So I think it's going to be really hard to dislodge any of those Republicans, and frankly, I don't expect it to happen. They can try with trying to pin him down on abortion. I'm not sure that's going to work. They could try with this idea of presidential immunity. They could try with his seeming hostility to the constitutionality of Obamacare and other kinds of regulations, environmental, for example. But I'm not sure anything is going to be enough to overcome the pressure on those Republicans from their base. And it's also coming from the business class and their base as well. The resistance to economic regulations, they're all for that. But the religious right really, really, really wants this confirmation. So I think it's going to be hard.
So we've been talking with Professor Stephen Clark, teaches constitutional law at Albany Law School. We have about a minute or so left. If listeners want to educate themselves about Judge Kavanaugh's judicial record, what are some good sources of information?
I think the media has actually done a quite good job so far in covering this. New York Times, Washington Post. I'd stay away from the liberal and the conservative outlets that are going to distort things to their advantage one way or another. But I think that the media is doing a pretty good job when they're talking about what his decisions are, what his views are in his writings, and that kind of thing. If you've got a good journalist, I think that's probably the best source. I could cite you to legal sources, but I don't think as a layperson that's going to be the best. I think we really have to rely on good journalists to do this.
Well, this has been Mark Dunley for WOC, and we want to thank Professor Clark for joining us today.
Thank you.
From Inverted Jenny, the 2017 local release from Catskill's Ross Goldstein, this is Upstate Blues.
In the hour of the wolf, in a black puddle of rain, upstate blues are giving me a pain. In the memory bank, everything is free. Under a shady tree,
WGXC believes in hands-on, two-way radio. We provide public access to the airwaves, giving individuals and organizations the means to tell their own stories. WGXC listeners make radio, participate in on-air conversations, record public meetings for broadcast, contribute content, host their own shows, and more. The G and the C stand for Green and Columbia Counties in New York. WGXC is listener-supported, and we serve 78,000 potential local listeners in the Upper Hudson Valley, in addition to listeners from across the globe online. Our programs can be surprising while wholesome, are often experimental, and almost always entertaining. Program applications are accepted year-round, and no prior experience is required. Wave Farm programs are made possible, in part, by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered in Greene County by the Greene County Council on the Arts, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the Foundation for Contemporary Arts, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors.
I'm Folk Grant. On July 11th, Governor Andrew M. Cuomo announced 13 projects for the city of Hudson as part of the $10 million Downtown Revitalization Initiative Award. Cuomo said, and I quote, "This important investment will support Hudson's continued transformation by focusing on a sustainable, diverse, and attractive downtown. These downtown revitalization initiative projects will help the city continue its revitalization efforts by fostering job growth, creating new business opportunities, and investing in community development that will improve Hudson's downtown for generations to come," end quote. The specific projects to be funded through the DRI include $4 million to implement complete street improvements, $1.1 million to renovate Promenade Hill Park and provide ADA access, $250,000 to improve the safety and aesthetics of Cross Street and the Second Street stairs, $400,000 to establish the North Bay Regeneration Project for Environmental Education, $700,000 to establish a community food hub to support small startup businesses, $1 million to stabilize the Dunn Warehouse for future reuse, $250,000 to winterize Basilica Hudson and create a high-visibility public green space, $487,000 to redevelop the CAT site as a mixed-use transit-oriented development, $250,000 to provide workforce development infrastructure at the River House, $150,000 to repurpose Spaghetti as a city park, $800,000 to construct mixed-use and mixed-income housing on State Street, $100,000 to provide minority women and veteran-owned businesses support, and $230,000 to fit out commercial kitchen and retail space to provide workforce training. Hudson was named a DRI Round 2 winner in August. You can read the full press release at governor.ny.gov. Emily Masters is reporting for the Times Union. The State Department of Environmental Conservation said a young man was injured July 6 after he hiked off the trail at Catterskill Falls and tumbled 40 feet. A concerned resident called the DEC to report the young man had fallen. Forest rangers said he was hiking with a group when he walked away on his own. The DEC said, and I quote, "Disregarding warning signs, he hiked off the trail and went down the steep slope below the viewing platform," end quote. The man quickly lost his footing on the slope's sharp angle and loose debris, and he fell, sliding approximately 40 feet, suffering injuries to his upper left leg and left arm. Assistant Forest Ranger Leslie Green found the man at the bottom of the stairs and started to treat him as other rangers and local rescuers rushed to the scene. The man was then carried to Route 23 trailhead, where they were met by the Hunter Emergency Squad. The man was taken to Columbia Memorial Hospital for treatment. Several hikers have been injured and four have died at the Greene County waterfall in the last 4 years. Read the full story in the Times Union. Kenneth Lovett is reporting for the Daily News. Planned Parenthood's State Political Action Committee has endorsed the re-election of Governor Andrew M. Cuomo and Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul. Planned Parenthood Empire State Votes PAC Chairwoman Robin Chappell Golston said, and I quote, "Now more than ever, we need experienced leaders who understand the importance of protecting access to abortion in New York State." Citing Cuomo's effort to increase contraception access and coverage and his push to strengthen the state's abortion rights law, Chappell Golston dubbed the governor a, and I quote, "national leader in the fight for reproductive health rights," end quote. Chappell Golston also praised Hochul, who is facing a tough primary challenge from New York City Councilman Yomani Williams. Williams has said he personally opposes abortion, although he supports the legal right to it. In what seemed to be a shot at Williams, Chappell Golston said, and I quote, "We cannot afford to have leaders who are not personally committed to our issues and other progressive values we believe in," end quote. Cuomo and Hochul previously received the support of the New York chapter of the National Organization for Women. Read the full story in the Daily News. The Associated Press is reporting that Democrat gubernatorial primary candidate Cynthia Nixon is criticizing New York's voting rules, promising to change them if elected. Nixon announced proposals July 11th to approve advance voting, to make voting registration easier, and to loosen deadlines for party affiliation changes. Nixon slammed her primary opponent, two-term Governor Andrew Cuomo, for not overhauling state voting rules. Cuomo supports many of the same proposals as Nixon. To date, those proposals have been blocked in the legislature. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio Daily News. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, wgxc.org. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow. Next, we have these reports.
Cities and states are using their collective influence to speed up the transition to electric vehicles. This weekend is the second running of the Formula E Championship, 10 teams driving electric cars in a race along the Brooklyn waterfront. On Tuesday, against that backdrop, the Climate Group, an international organization dedicated to fighting global climate change, launched the Zero Emissions Vehicle Challenge. Climate Group CEO Helen Clarkson says cities and businesses operate large fleets, and by switching to electric, they send a signal to automobile manufacturers.
Zero-emission vehicles are here today, so the sooner we can really get them into the market, the better. And by really pulling this demand signal together, we give the surety to manufacturers that they can switch, and they can switch quickly.
The state of California, as well as cities like New York, Los Angeles, London, Paris, and major businesses around the world, have joined the Zero Emission Vehicle Challenge. Transportation is now the leading source of greenhouse gas emissions. According to New York City's Chief Fleet Officer Keith Kerman, the Big Apple is already in the process of switching its fleet of 30,000 vehicles to electric power.
We're going to be basically buying only electric sedans from now on. Mayor de Blasio committed in his State of the City that we would only buy electric cars moving forward, and that's what we're doing.
He says the city is also moving quickly to install infrastructure like fast charging stations to help with the transition both for city-owned and private electric vehicles. Clarkson notes that as demand increases, the price of electric vehicles is falling. As more cities, states, and businesses commit to the zero-emission challenge, she says the message is clear.
We want with this challenge to say to the automotive industry, you know, tell us what your end game is. This is happening, but how quickly can you do it? What can you commit to by 2025, and what can you commit to beyond that?
She adds that several countries, including the United Kingdom, Norway, France, and India, have said they will ban internal combustion engines beginning in the year 2040. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
The Wavefarm app is now in the App Store for users to download. It's only available on iPhones and iPads. An Android version of the app will be developed as soon as funding allows. The Wavefarm app allows users to listen to live audio from any of the Wavefarm web streams, including WGXC 90.7 FM, Standing Wave Radio, which was formerly known as Wavefarm Radio, Quintron's Weather Warlock, Zakpov's Pond Station, and other partner streams. Users may also create custom playlists from the thousands of archived audio files. Wavefarm transmit partners and WGXC broadcast partners may now also stream their own audio feeds from their iPhones and iPads using the app. Again, you can go into the App Store and search for Wavefarm Radio.
tune into the sounds of Field Recordings in Composition on the Framework Show, Saturdays at 7 p.m. on Wavefarm Radio and WGXC. Tune in Framework's Field Recording Compositions every Saturday. Here's Stottsville's SVB, her tape release, Disco is Long Life. This is Side A, Synergistic Energy Exchange, from Stottsville's SVB.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Richard Moody reports for the Columbia Green Media that it is official now. There will be a rematch in November between Republican Assemblyperson Chris Teague of Schoharie and Democrat Green County Legislator Adrian O'Connor Jr. of Durham for the 102nd Assembly District seat.
Teague beat O'Connor by 159 votes at a special election in April in a seat held for years by Republican Pete Lopez. O'Connor Jr. is hoping that the purported blue wave shows up at the polls in November to close that 159-vote gap. On July 10th, O'Connor filed 1,167 petition signatures for the Democrat, Working Families, and Women's Equality November ballot lines, and Teague reports collecting more than 3,000 signatures. O'Connor said, and I quote, "We will officially launch our campaign sometime in August. We will be running a little bit different campaign than we did the last time. One of our messages is that we have never stopped. We have been attending events and knocking on doors," end quote. Carol Riggs, the former campaign manager for congressional candidate Brian Flynn, who lost in the Democratic primary for the 19th Congressional District June 26, has been added to the O'Connor campaign staff. Teague has not officially started campaigning yet, but has been showing up at Greene County Republican events. Teague said, and I quote, "I'm looking forward to spending time hitting the streets and knocking on doors to earn every last vote. I'm resolved to continue my hard work and dedication working with and for the people of the 102nd Assembly District," end quote. Bridget Bowen reports in Roll Call that a Democrat-backed poll has the Democrats slightly leading in the congressional election. The first poll after Antonio Delgado became the Democrats' nominee against freshman incumbent John Faso, the Republican of Kinderhook, shouldn't be taken all too seriously. But the poll commissioned by the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee has Delgado with a 7-point advantage with a 49-42% result. In 2016, Faso beat Democrat Zephyr Teachout roughly 54-46% in the 19th Congressional District, so that would be quite a swing, but in line with similar Democrat turnout in recent primary and special elections around the country. This Democrat-funded poll questioned 545 likely general election voters June 27th and 28th through a mix of live cell phone and automated landline phone interviews, with a margin of error of 4.2 points. Faso has been attacked by Democrats for 2 years and has just a 30% favorable result in the poll, much lower than Delgado's 45%. The National Republican Congressional Committee dismissed the poll from their counterparts in a statement July 11th, and I quote, "Leave it to the DCCC to release a bogus poll just days after Antonio Delgado was exposed for recording disturbing and offensive rap lyrics," end quote. NRCC spokesman Chris Martin said, and I quote, "They know how painfully out of touch Delgado is with the district, and this is a desperate attempt to convince the media that his campaign is even remotely viable," end quote. Read the full story in Roll Call. Larry Rulson reports in the Albany Times-Union that the numbers are in for the proposed $100 million Amazon distribution center on Route 9 in Skodak. The developer wants $13.7 million in state and local tax breaks, and the project, a new study shows, brings a net tax benefit of $31 million to the town and the East Greenbush Central School District over 20 years. The study was done for Scannell Properties, the Indianapolis-based firm that wants to build and own the 1-million-square-foot facility. That number doesn't include the $24.5 million in annual wages from the 800-plus jobs the Amazon facility would create. Trucks leaving the 116-acre site would travel south on Route 9 toward Exit 12 on the I-90. Scannell's application predicts the total cost of the building is $90 million. On July 2nd, the Skodak Planning Board approved the project, and now the town board needs to approve a water and sewer extension before construction can proceed in the southern Rensselaer County town. Read the full story in the Albany Times-Union. Madison Isler reports in the Albany Times-Union that New York consumers grew more optimistic in the second quarter of 2018, while the majority of the nation grew pessimistic. The new poll from the Siena College Research Institute reports New York State's index of consumer sentiment rose 2.1 points, while the national figure fell 3 points in April, May, and June. Upstate New Yorkers were more optimistic than city dwellers by a 2-point margin. Dr. Doug Lundstrom, the Institute's founding director and a professor of statistics and finance at Siena, said the results are, and I quote, "driven by greater confidence in the future of business and economic conditions," end quote. Read the full story
in the Albany Times Union. So that wraps up the WGXE Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXE website, WGXE.org. Here is the regional weather forecast for the Hudson Valley and Capital Region.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts a sunny Friday with a high near 78 and a low around 63. Then Saturday, there's a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 p.m. Mostly cloudy skies and a high near 81. Saturday night, there's a 40% chance of rain with a low around 66. Sunday, it should be mostly sunny with a high near 85 and a low around 67. And Monday, it should be mostly sunny with a high near 88 and a low around 69. I'm Tom Rowe for WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, listener-supported, creative community radio.
Coming up on the WGXC 90.7 FM community program schedule for Friday, July 13th, Frederick Arnold will be live in the Hudson studio with City Folk from 11 until noon, followed by Jared Widges-Coog with the Sugar Shack Jukebox after the noon headlines until 2 o'clock. From 2 to 3, Hudson Valley Sound, presenting local music and poetry with live performances, interviews, and songs from albums. Later on in the evening at 7 o'clock, our guest DJs this week are Amanda Lees and Jenny Getty. That's live from 7 to 9:30 in the Hudson studio, followed by the Friday night vibe session with Shavar Thomas until midnight.
Tune in for transmission art all day Saturday, July 14th, with all sorts of radio news in the morning with Amateur Radio Newsline at 7:05, Glenn Hauser's World of Radio at 7:30 a.m., the Radio Survivor Show with radio news at 8 a.m., then a brand new episode of Donald Trump Theater, The Manchurian Candidate, is on at 9:05 a.m. after the local news, with Radio Wonderland live from Brooklyn at 10:30 a.m. Tune in to transmission art all day Saturday, July 14th on the radio, WGXC.
There are so many events on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org, and you can add your own by pressing the Add an Event button right there on the page. If you do, folks like me will read your community event on the radio. Folks around the world will see it online at WGXC.org, including some of these events.
Friday, July 13th, there is a Lumpland Coloring Workshop with local musician Emily Ritz at Drop Forge and Tool in Hudson, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. The Revenge of the Space Pandas or Binky Rudick and the Two-Speed Clock continues at the Bridge Street Theater Friday, July 13th with a performance at 7:30 p.m. PS21 hosts the Winifred Horan Trio with Irish fiddler Winifred Horan, a member of Cherished Ladies, and also co-founded the Irish group Solace. That's at PS21 in Chatham, Friday, July 13th. Also Friday, July 13th, Yada Diada International Folkloric Theater is at PS21 in Chatham. Liam Singer is at High Low in Catskill. He's the owner of High Low in Catskill, and he's releasing his album Friday, July 13th at High Low in Catskill, 365 Main Street. There should be a live web stream to listen to online. Friday, July 13th, Martin Sexton. There's an evening with Martin Sexton at the Beverly in Kingston, put on by the BSP folks. That's at 8 p.m. Friday, July 13th at the Beverly. Friday, July 13th, Chuck Prophet and the Mission Express. The former leader of Green on Red is at Club Helsinki in Hudson, 9 p.m. Friday, July 13th. Saturday, July 14th, there's a drag queen story time at 11 a.m. at the Hudson Area Library. That's followed later in the day by a community conversation about the future of the Hudson Area Library, 3 p.m. Saturday, July 14th at the Hudson Area Library. The Ketchke Farm in Kinderhook has a Sylvia Center farm-to-table dinner Saturday, July 14th. That's at 745 Fisher Road in Kinderhook. It's an annual fundraiser including garden tours, cocktails, and dinner at the Ketchke Farm in Kinderhook.
The Revenge of the Space Pandas or Binky Rudick and the Two-Speed Clock continues Saturday, July 14th at the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill at 7:30 p.m. The Versatones play at Dewey Hall in Sheffield, Massachusetts, Saturday, July 14th. It's a swing dance with a lesson at 7:30 p.m. with Jason Fenton. Live music starts at 8:30 p.m. with the Versatones. Saturday, July 14th, the Latin Grammy winner Marichi Flora del Tolachi performs traditional Mexican music at PS 21 in Chatham. That's at 8 p.m. Also, Saturday, July 14th, M. Ward and Nellie McKay perform at the Bearsville Theater in Woodstock, and the 77th New York Regimental Balladeers perform at 8 p.m. Saturday, July 14th at the Valencia Community Theater. The Wyndham, New York-based Balladeers are celebrating their 20th year, and they perform songs from the Antebellum and Civil War period. 8 p.m. Saturday, July 14th at the Valencia Community Theater. Also, there is storytelling by local residents directed by Paul Riccardi called Real People, Real Stories Summer Edition at the Ankrum Opera House Saturday, July 14th at 8 p.m. Shamika Copeland is at Club Helsinki in Hudson Saturday, July 14th at 9 p.m. Otto Hauser and Tyler Wood perform at 8:30 p.m. Saturday, July 14th at High Low in Catskill. That should be a live web stream and a live broadcast at WGX.
There is nothing wrong with your television set. Do not attempt to adjust the picture. We are controlling transmission. If we wish to make it louder, we will bring up the volume. If we wish to make it softer, we will tune it to a whisper. We will control the horizontal. We will control the vertical. We can roll the image, make it flutter. We can change the focus to a soft blur or sharpen it to crystal clarity. For the next hour, sit quietly and we will control all that you see and hear. We repeat, there is nothing wrong with your television set. You are about to participate in a great adventure. You are about to experience the awe and mystery which reaches from the inner mind to the outer limits.
This is Echo. You are listening to WJFC Acra, Creative Community Magical Radio.
I'm a roadrunner, honey.
Thank you.